Hello and welcome to the Dynasty Baseball Pickups Podcast. Today is April 27th. I'm Kyle Sontag and I'm joined as always by Taylor Corso. How are you today, Taylor?
I'm doing pretty good. We're recording this a little later than we usually do, so I have a little bit of food coma from carne asada burrito I had. But other than that, I'm doing good. How about you?
That doesn't sound like such a bad thing at all. I'm doing well too. Little bit heavier as well. Like you said, we usually record first thing in the morning almost. I finish my workout and hop on with you, and a little different today. So it should still be a good one though.
Yeah, for sure. We have a lot of fun players to talk about today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before we get into some of that though, I just want to remind everyone we are brought to you by Prospects Live, where there is always some really exciting stuff going on, including an update to the PLive Plus tool that brought the 2024 pitchers in there, the daily sheets that highlight the top performers from across the minor leagues every single day, our Dynasty Baseball Pickups written articles that come out twice a week, and an upcoming update to the top 500 prospects list that we are going to discuss a little bit more later. But there's all that and so much more. So be sure to subscribe to Prospects Live for as little as $5 to gain access to all of these tools and so much more. But speaking of that list update, as I just mentioned, one topic we are going to cover today is not only the forming of those lists, but we're going to bring up a few names that we are higher or lower on than we expected before we put together our lists. We will, as always, also be giving you guys a few names that we think you should be adding in your dynasty leagues. But before we get into all of that, there are a couple of prospects I wanted to touch on briefly who are absolutely demolishing AAA right now. These are a couple of players we have actually discussed before, both on this podcast and on the preseason Prospects Live podcast, where we were asked for one player in each division that we think will make an impact as a rookie this season. I'm talking about Jordan Beck and Joey Lopez. Perfido. And to this point, Loperfido has been putting up a 135 WRC plus, which has largely been fueled by his 12 home runs in just 23 games, while Jordan Beck is currently running a WRC plus of 137, backed by an impressive slash line of 301, 391, 602. Now, Loperfido is showing a little bit more power, but he's also striking out at a clip north of 30%, while Beck is showing off a little bit more of a well-rounded profile with a strikeout rate of just 20%, as his swing decisions and contact rates have improved greatly, really not only this season over last, but also within this season. We've seen his contact and his strikeout numbers improve dramatically. So, Taylor, my two questions for you are, one, which of these players, Loperfido or Beck, would you rather have in Dynasty right now? And two, which one do you think is going to be called up and start contributing in the big leagues first?
Yeah, great question. So first off, I have Beck as my one I'd rather have in Dynasty. And that really comes down to the fact that the contact has just been so much better. And you covered it with Loperfido and the bad strikeout rate and everything. And we've talked about it a lot, so I don't want to get too much into it. Even since that six strikeout game he had, he's still at a 28% strikeout rate. And although the contact rates have been improving, the whiff rates have been improving, similar to Beck, I just have a little bit more faith in Beck long-term to kind of reach his ceiling versus Loperfido. But I still really like Loperfido. But now we can reference rankings as we finished our prospect ranking. So I have Beck at 34 and Loperfido at 82 for comparison there. But as far as which one gets called up first, I think it's going to be Loperfido. The Houston first base situation is just really bad. I mean, you look at what Abreu has done this year, and he just looks like he's toast. And Loperfido was one of the last cuts from spring big league camp. So I feel like Loperfido is going to be up sooner rather than later. He's probably the one I would rather have for this year, but long-term, I think the ceiling's higher with Beck, even though with the Rockies, you never know what they're going to do with their prospects.
Yeah, I'm with you 100% really on both of your answers there. I've got Beck, I believe, inside my top 50. Lo Perfido just inside the top 100, very similarly to you. And then as far as who gets called up first, I completely agree. Lo Perfido sure seems like the more likely candidate at this point, and a lot of it does have to do with that opportunity. Like you said, the first base situation in Houston has just been really quite dismal, while in Colorado, really quite surprising to myself and I think many others out there, the outfield situation has actually been not terrible, especially when you consider that Nolan Jones, probably expected to be their biggest contributor in the outfield, has really been struggling so far this season. But a guy like Brenton Doyle is putting up a surprisingly good season so far, and they did just call up, I believe it's Hunter Goodman as well. So that's a fairly crowded outfield all of a sudden, where the path to playing time is a little bit easier for Lo Perfido.
Yeah, definitely.
But with that, we promised you guys some more players that we think you should be adding in your dynasty leagues, and we are here to deliver. We've got two names each, four total. Taylor, why don't you kick it off with your first name?
Yeah, my first name is Winston Santos. He's 22 years old, starting pitcher in the Rangers organization at High A. And the biggest thing with him is the swing and miss has just taken a huge step forward this year. You look what he did last year, and in almost 100 innings pitched, he had just a 19.9% K rate. This year, in 15.2 innings pitched, he has a 40% K rate. So he more than doubled his strikeout rate from where it was last year. But the key thing is that he did that while maintaining his plus control. So last year he had just a 5.9% walk rate. This year it's just a 6.7% walk rate. So he's put up a 0.57 ERA and a 1.13 whip. And it's really the combination of being able to strike out more batters while showing that he still has that great control, because he has a really good fastball. So the stuff is pretty good. He's got a plus mid-90s fastball featuring 19 inches of IVB, and he's got a pretty good changeup as well. The slider was kind of lagging behind previous to this year, but it looks like it's made some improvements. So, you know, we got a potential three pitch mix here with the good control, and it's really being really successful this year. One thing that, looking at what he did last year, that kind of held him back was when he got promoted to High A, he really struggled with the home runs. And one thing that we haven't seen him do this year is allow a home run, which is really nice to see. But I'm a little bit wary because he has had a career high fly ball rate this year and a career low ground ball rate. And he's definitely had some luck with that 0.57 ERA because he has a 92.3% strand rate. So I don't think he's going to obviously keep this up. He's been a little lucky. And I do worry about those home runs eventually with how many fly balls he's giving up. But I'm really encouraged by the swinging miss stuff. I think this is a pretty promising arm, and I have him at number 232 in my prospect rankings. So what do you think about Santos?
Yeah, you nailed it. There's not a whole lot more that needs to be said about Santos right now. The surface numbers are great, although it sounds like there's a bit of luck involved. A lot of the underlying numbers are great too. The pitches look great. I mean, his K-minus walk rate is 97th percentile in High A. His CSW percentage, 94th percentile. It's a 77th percentile O-swing percentage and a 79th percentile swinging strike rate. The bottom line here is that Santos is just missing a ton of bats right now, and that almost always leads to excellent results, which we are seeing right now. Now, the one knock for me is the fact that at 22 years old, Santos is repeating High A right now after having thrown nearly 100 innings at the level last season. Now, the numbers he put up last season weren't nearly as impressive as what he's doing right now, so that might explain why he's repeating the level, but it sure seems pretty clear to me that Santos has taken a step forward. He needs a promotion, and he needs to be challenged in the upper levels of the minors.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. He actually pitches today, so he hasn't started yet as we're recording this on Saturday, April 27th, but yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does and how quickly he can get that promotion. Because I agree, I'm not going to move him up any further in my rankings until we see him against better competition. And I'm also a little bit suspect always of Texas Rangers pitching development, because they have ruined a lot of high-level prospects, or at least they haven't panned out quite yet. So we'll have to see about that.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot to like with Santos. But moving on to my guy now, I'm looking at Gerall Perez. I believe it's pronounced Gerall. It's spelled J-E-R-A-L. I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the name here, but we're going to go with Gerall today. He is a 19-year-old middle infielder in the LA Dodgers organization, currently playing in A-ball. Now, I say middle infielder because he has played a lot of shortstop in the past, but he has primarily played second base so far this season. He is listed at 6 foot on the dot and 179 pounds. This is a player I just ranked as my 232nd prospect, and I'm going to be honest, Taylor, after diving in a little bit more, I think I might need to bump him up even further.
I think you do. I have him as my 170th, so I think you're a little low.
Yeah, I think he's going to come inside my top 200 here when we're done recording. His slash line really sets the tone here. It's a 344, 474, 639 slash with 4 home runs and 2 stolen bases. And one of the most impressive parts here is actually what the approach numbers look like. It's an 18.4% strikeout rate and a 17.1% walk rate. Now, Perez is the first player I'm bringing to the pod today because he is someone that we actually had a little bit of a fight over who got to discuss him in our articles this week. Ultimately, you were gracious enough to let me write about him. And I'm glad you did because he had an excellent week. He hit 3 home runs this week. And when we talk about the power that Gerall Perez can bring to the plate, one of those 3 home runs, and I'm glad I have this because I don't have a ton of exit velocity data on him, but one of the home runs he hit this week came off the bat at 106 miles an hour. And that ball traveled 422 feet. Now, pairing with that, so far this year, he has a hard hit rate of 34.5%. So there is a really impressive amount of power in this kid's bat. But like I said before, that's almost not even the most impressive part of his game right now, because his plate approach and contact rates have really impressed me so far. And as I mentioned off the top, the K and walk rates are really impressive. He's walking nearly as much as he is striking out, both at very impressive rates. And the numbers back that up. He has a 78.6% contact rate overall, and his 87.7% in-zone contact rate ranks in the 93rd percentile in all of A-ball, while his swinging strike rate of just 7.1% matches that, as it also ranks in the 93rd percentile at the level. Now, the one thing I will say is that his in-zone swing rate ranks in the bottom 10% of A-ball. So how much of this impressive approach is him being maybe too passive, and how much is him just taking advantage of pitchers with bad control might be tough to say, but given his contact rates and quality of contact numbers, I'm really excited by Gerall Perez, and I can't wait to see him work his way up through the Dodgers system, because I really want to see what the approach looks like when he starts seeing some more refined pitching.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, obviously, there's a reason why we were both excited about him. He's, even though he's repeating low A, he's still 19 years old, still pretty young for the level. And the numbers he's putting up, like you mentioned, are just absolutely awesome. That contact rate is really exciting. You did mention a little bit about his approach and how he doesn't swing a lot. So yeah, this is definitely a more passive approach, which hopefully he can get a little bit more aggressive with more time, because the skills are definitely there. I don't know how much stolen base potential he'll have long-term, but this looks like a solid hit power middle infielder. And in the Dodgers organization, that's always pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Yeah. You touched on the speed there. I don't think he's going to be a huge contributor in the stolen bases aspect, but I don't think he's going to be a zero either.
Yeah. I mean, about 250 or so plate appearances last year, he had 9 stolen bases. So he might be able to get his way to like double digit steals, but that's not going to be a huge part of his game.
No, but it doesn't need to be if the rest of the profile continues to progress the way that it has so far. You'll take the 8 to 12 stolen bases that he might chip in.
Definitely. And just for our listeners, as kind of context, we both kind of came to discover him around the same time frame. I think it was I was kind of looking through minor leaguers at night, as I will typically do, and came across him and added him in a couple leagues. And then by the time I had woken up in the morning, you had come across him as well, got really excited and added him in a bunch of leagues as well. So it was kind of like we both kind of found him right about the same time. So it was a question of, okay, which article is he gonna be in here? But yeah, I read what you wrote and I think you did an awesome job. And I think he's just a really exciting prospect that has had like you mentioned, a huge week. So definitely wanted to bring him up on the podcast here.
Absolutely. But with that, who is the second player you wanted to call out as a potential pickup today?
Yeah, from one Dodger to another, I can't keep getting away with this. We've got Jose Rodriguez. So this is kind of a deeper cut. He is 22 years old. He's actually a reliever in the Dodgers organization at low A. So 22 years old at A ball, you know, he's definitely old for the level. And why am I talking about a reliever? Well, he has traditionally been a 1 to 2 inning reliever in his career so far. But this year, the Dodgers are stretching him out. They've been bringing him into games in the third inning of each one of his outings so far, and he's pitched 3.1, 5, and 4.2 innings in those three outings. And the biggest thing with him is he is just racking up the whiffs at low A and the strikeouts. So far this year, in 13 innings pitched, he's got a 3.46 ERA, a 1.08 whip, a 44.6% strikeout rate, and just a 7.1% walk rate. Now, he's always been able to get strikeouts. He's always been able to limit the walks in that reliever role. But one of the things that he's struggled with in the past is just being a little bit too hittable. So last year, he had a 300 batting average against, which was fueled by a 426 BABIP. But this year, here's just hitting 200 against him, and he's still got a BABIP over 400. And he's really come on in his last couple outings. In his last two outings, in just 9.2 innings pitched, he has an insane 50 combined whiffs in those 9.2 innings pitched, 19 strikeouts. So he is just racking up the strikeouts, and the stuff is really good. He's got a low to mid 90s fastball. He's got a plus changeup. He has a slider that is looking a lot better this year. And this guy is very interesting frame. He's 6'6", so he's pretty tall. He's 200 pounds. So there is definitely some projection on his frame. There is room to add more velocity here. And when he already has a pretty effective fastball that he routinely will hit 95, and in his role as a reliever, he's touched 97 before. If that fastball ticks up, there's a lot to like here. Now, you have to wonder, what is the role long-term? Why are they bringing him in kind of in that third inning? Will they fast track him to more of a bullpen role? Because again, the Dodgers are always a very crowded system, but I do think there's a lot to like here. I think it's very interesting. The Dodgers are stretching him out. We'll see if he can continue to put up these kind of performances. I'm adding him in leagues of 400 or more prospects. He did not make my top 300 prospect list, but he is somebody who I think is a good backup plan in deeper leagues if you miss out on another pitcher I just want to mention real quick, who is Jonah Tong. Now, Jonah Tong similarly was more of a, maybe kind of appeared more of a reliever. He came into games, hasn't necessarily started all of his games so far this year, but has been putting up incredible whiff numbers in low A, similar to Jose Rodriguez. And so I just wanted to kind of mention him real quick. He was a 22 seventh round pick, has 66 whiffs in 18.2 innings pitched, 36 strikeouts across his four appearances there, has yet to give up a single earned run. So Tong has a 0.00 ERA, a 52.9% strikeout rate, and a 7.4% walk rate. And I kind of want to lump them together again, because I do feel like they both need a promotion. They're both absolutely carving up low A there, but I want to see them promoted up to high A. And the biggest thing with Tong, and why it took me a while to write him up, I did include him this week, is that he's had a lot of walk issues in the past. So last year at both complex and low A, he had a 22% walk rate at both levels, which is just like absolutely horrendous. You rarely see walk rates that high. This year it's down to 7.4, and he's had two straight outings with zero walks, which he didn't have a single outing of more than an inning last year without a walk. So being able to do that twice in a row, I'm really excited about him. I just moved him up in my rankings. It might not be reflected because I already had to submit them. But I moved him from about the 230 range up to where I kind of have George Clausen and Brett Wichrowski around 191. So for him, it's low 90s fastball, but it averages 20 and a half inches of IVB. He's got a good curve, a good cutter. So super excited about Jonah Tong. Again, if you missed out on him in those deeper leagues, I would definitely take a look at Jose Rodriguez if you're in those 400 plus rostered leagues. But I've blabbered on for a while here. So Kyle, what do you think of Jose Rodriguez and Jonah Tong as well?
I'm going to touch on Tong real quick first before getting back into Jose Rodriguez. Obviously, what Tong is doing is really impressive. I'm with you. He needs a promotion. We need to see him face some more advanced hitters. But I think the big thing to note here, and something that will come up again with the next player I bring up, is the organization that Jonah Tong is in. Because the New York Mets are one of, really, in my opinion, three organizations who, over the last few years, have done a really good job revamping their development system, and in particular, are suddenly pumping out a ton of really exciting pitching prospects. So one of those organizations being the Mets, one of those organizations being the Tigers that we've discussed a few times when we've talked about players like Keeter Montero and Jaden Hamm, but the third one being the Pittsburgh Pirates. I'll touch on them a little bit more later, but you know, we've already seen Jared Jones this season. Paul Skeens, not that they necessarily have a whole lot to do with him, but he's exciting. They've got a ton of super exciting arms down there too. And I think that that is something that we can take note of, because would you say even a year or two ago, we wouldn't be this positive about really any of these three organizations in the Mets, Tigers, or Pirates. So it's really just a good lesson to make sure that we aren't stuck in our ways in how we view certain organizations, because they can make progress, much like they can help a prospect make progress. So I think it's really important to make sure that our evaluations of these players are ever changing, but also the evaluations and the way that we think of these organizations, because again, these three orgs have just completely transformed themselves in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I had heard about what the Mets were doing. I had heard about what the Tigers were doing. The Pirates, I had heard some rumblings, things had changed, but I was still very skeptical, even as far as a couple months ago when we were covering our FYPD stuff and what kind of impact we would have to worry about with Paul Skeens. But looking at the performance of their prospects, it's been really good. And I do agree that it seems like they've turned a corner. We'll see if that persists, but I'm no longer docking pitchers in the Pirates organization. I don't know how far I'm boosting them up yet, but at the very least, I would consider them to be a fine development organization for pitching at this point. And if they continue it, potentially I will upgrade that a little bit. But for now, I still don't quite trust them.
Yeah, I definitely get that. Their transformation is a little bit more fresh and doesn't quite have the same track record of results as the Mets and the Tigers. And again, track record is a very loose term right now, because we're talking about a change that's happened over a matter of a year or two. But sorry, getting back to Jose Rodriguez here, I'm with you on him. And you can really take a lot of what we said about Winston Santos earlier and just amplify it with Jose Rodriguez, because when it comes to the swing and miss stuff, he ranks in the top 5% or so in a ton of metrics in A-ball, including being the best pitcher at the level with regards to eliciting swinging strikes, as nobody else in the league can compare to his 28.7% swinging strike rate. Now, besides the fact that he is sort of a converted reliever here, the other concern I do have with Rodriguez is the fact that I tend to see his changeup graded significantly better than his other pitches almost everywhere I look. And as we have discussed on this podcast in the past, that type of pitcher can dominate in the lower levels because hitters just aren't used to seeing a good changeup. But sometimes these types of pitchers can run into some trouble in the higher levels when the changeup may not stand out as much if the other pitches can't match it. Now, the good news with Rodriguez is it sounds like the fastball and the slider are legitimate offerings as well. So this isn't the changeup first sort of a pitcher that typically has big problems when they move up the ranks, move up the levels. But if the changeup really has been that big of a difference maker, and I don't know for sure that it has been, this is me speculating because I saw that it got the highest grades in a lot of places, but I could see the swing and miss stuff coming down a little bit as he does move into the upper levels.
Yeah, that's a great point. I hadn't really thought about that with the changeup because I had seen good things about the other two pitches. But yeah, I think traditionally the changeup has been his number one graded pitch. So hopefully the other two pitches, it seems like they're getting a lot of whiffs. So he's not necessarily relying on the changeup for those strikeouts. So hopefully that persists. And like you mentioned, he needs to get a promotion. I mean, we're 22 years old at low A. We'll see what he does once he gets promoted. That's why I'm not moving him up as far as some of these other guys. There's a lot more questions there. But like you mentioned, that league-leading swinging strike rate, is pretty exciting for a guy that has no worries about his walk rates. I mean, last year, he had a 2.8% walk rate and has traditionally had very low walk rates. This year, it's 7.1%. So if he can continue to strike out all those hitters and not walk hitters, I mean, that's a really promising arm.
Absolutely. Yeah. The last thing I wanted to mention with Rodriguez before moving on to my last guy here is just the organization that he's in, being the Dodgers organization, of course, as we've mentioned. And how we can sometimes view that as a good thing, but also a negative at times, because while we like their development system, it sometimes means that these players get blocked unless there's a trade of some sort that happens. But when it comes to Jose Rodriguez and Gerald Perez, who we talked about earlier, I just don't see that being a huge negative at this point because they're in low A, right? They're not knocking on the door to the big leagues in double A or triple A. They are at least a year or two away, if not more, from that even being a part of the conversation. So for me, I look at all the positives of the organization that they are in right now because they are so far away from the bigs. How much of an effect does that have on you when we're looking at players in the lower minors?
I think you nailed it. It's something that sits in the back of your mind. And I think what we saw with a player, another Dodgers player like Dalton Rushing, sometimes it can impact their ability to get promoted because you have a bit of a logjam. And catcher's a unique position because there's only so many that can get playing time. But like Rushing, it seems like his development, despite just absolute awesome performances, his progression through the minors has been slowed just because of the logjam there at the Dodgers. But again, he's higher up than the guys that we're talking about, obviously. So yeah, I don't worry so much about it at this point, but I do think it becomes a concern once you hit double A. And I think in addition to the Dodgers, I think we're starting to see that same thing with the Orioles. And I think that logjam's only going to get worse as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Moving on to my last guy now, though. I mentioned earlier that we are starting to trust the Pirates a little bit more. And the second name I want to bring to the table here is a Pirates pitching prospect in Patrick Riley. This is a 22-year-old pitching prospect in high A. He is listed at 6'3", 208 pounds. And I snuck him just inside my top 300 at the last minute because we were talking about him when we had to submit these rankings, and he was someone that we felt needed to be on the list. So when it comes to Riley, the numbers so far this season are a little bit of a mixed bag, but bear with me because I'm going to clarify some things as I go along here. So in 16 and two-thirds innings so far this season, he has a 4.32 ERA, but really that ERA is where the ugly or the bad numbers sort of stop because he has a 1.02 whip to go along with a 43.9% strikeout rate and a 9.1% walk rate. And when it comes to Riley, that walk rate is the key because a lot of the success he's having this season, even if the ERA isn't spectacular, a lot of the reason he's having this success comes down to his control. When we look at his numbers from 2023, he had a 17% walk rate. Now, that was just 10 and two-thirds innings. but that is still way too high and is largely in line with what he showed throughout his collegiate career. This season, however, as I mentioned off the top, he has cut that walk rate down to 9.1%, and that is somewhat close to the 10% danger zone we like starters to stay away from. But when you pair that with his swing and miss stuff, it is more than good enough. Riley operates with a mid-90s fastball with great metrics and good ride up in the zone, a cutter in the low 90s, a swing and miss slider, and a changeup that currently grades out as just a notch below average, but could become his fourth average or better offering if it can become just a little bit more consistent, because it does show flashes of being an above average pitch. It's just not very consistent right now. And all of that stuff has led to a very impressive 34.8% K minus walk rate, which is backed by a 19.2% swinging strike rate, good for 94th percentile in high A. Now, when we get back to that 4.32 ERA, because I said I was going to clarify some things here, although that number itself isn't particularly pretty, it does come with a 2.71 FIP and an even lower 1.86 expected FIP. So when you look at that and the 310 BABIP that hitters are running against him right now, it's pretty clear to me that Riley is running into some bad luck with batted balls in play, and the surface numbers will soon improve to match his stellar underlying numbers. Now, as I mentioned, this is a guy we both snuck into the back end of our top 300 rankings. And if those numbers continue to improve, like I think they will, this is a guy whose prospect stock is only going to continue to improve as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you hit on all of it. For me, similar to how I was with Tong after his first couple starts, I need to see the walk rate just consistently remain that low before I'm fully buying in. But like you said, I stuck him into the back end of my top 300. I think there is some nice upside here. And as we already covered, the Pirates organization has been doing a great job lately with their pitching prospects. So I haven't picked up any shares yet, but that's more so because he was already grabbed in a bunch of my leagues that are of the depth where I would pick him up rather than that I'm not into him, because I definitely am. I think there's some exciting traits here, like you said, when you talked about his arsenal. And I think there's maybe a little bit of a buying opportunity here with the ERA being so much worse than the ERA estimator. So we'll see what happens with him. But yeah, he's an exciting arm for sure.
Absolutely. I think you make a good point there that there could be a buying opportunity. And if he is someone that is currently on another team's roster that you are interested in, you probably won't have to pay a whole lot to get him, depending on how savvy that other owner is. Because like you said, some people are going to look at the surface stats, see a 4.32 ERA, say, hey, this is a league with 400 prospects owned. I can probably go find someone better on the wire. But if you're willing to offer him just whoever you would drop to grab Patrick Riley anyways, that might be enough to get the deal done. But if he is on your wire, this is a good time to grab him, because those numbers should start to improve and his stock is only going to rise.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
All right. But now that we have these prospect rankings lists of our own, we need to talk about them, because this really was quite the process to put these things together. I have to say, I've got a whole new level of respect for those that have had these lists and kept them up for years. And I know it'll be a little bit different starting with an existing list rather than starting from scratch, but that was a lot of work to get a top 300 list out there. It took many hours, many revisions, and I'm sure you can attest to this, Taylor. Every time you look at it now, there's something else you want to tweak, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's an ever-living document.
Absolutely, yeah. But let's get into the process of creating these rankings a little bit, because I think it's a really interesting process, and I'm curious to hear how similar your process was to mine.
Yeah, I mean, before I get into it, I just got to agree with everything you just said. Like, it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. I tend to be kind of indecisive and a perfectionist, and that's like the worst combination possible for this particular task. So yeah, it just took me hours and hours. I love the deep dive players, look at all the scouting reports and watch video clips and look at the stats and the advanced stats. And you know, when you're talking about 300 plus players that you have to go through to review all that, I mean, I think at the end of the day, I probably looked at 400 players, and then you'll figure out where to rank them next to each other. And you can't all do it in one day, so it's across multiple days and things are changing. It's an incredible challenge. So like you said, I just have a ton of respect for anybody that takes the time to put one of these lists together, because they're never going to be perfect. And I could look at it the next day and not agree with all, what's on that list. But I think that just goes for these rankings lists in general, because they are super important as well. I mean, everybody uses those lists. It gives you a good idea of not only how you can value prospects on your own, but like how your league mates might be valuing prospects as well. So the way I looked at it was trying to assess each player on whether or not I would trade them, or at the bottom half, whether or not I would drop them for the players above or below them. So I really, because we've had it before where we've created like FYPD rankings and then shared them with our league mates, and then our league mates are like, oh, here, let me send you a trade offer because you say you take this guy over this guy. So that's what I didn't want to have happen. And I wanted to be realistic rankings for me. So for example, if I have a player that I like, am I going to trade that for a player who I think is valued a lot higher by other people? And I think there's value in having the bigger name, even though I like this other player as a sleeper. And I wouldn't necessarily trade that big name player for the sleeper. It has to fit together in terms of like what who would I prefer to have. So that's what I try to do with the rankings. I feel like I'm pretty happy with how they turned out. But yeah, they're never going to be perfect. And I'm hoping that the process of updating them is a lot shorter than the process of creating them from scratch, because I will not be able to do that on a regular basis. It just took way, way too much time.
Yeah, it was a lot of work. And it's really funny that you mention not wanting people to reach out and say, hey, I saw you had player X ranked above player Y. How about we make this trade? Because that's already happened to me. And it's funny because after a certain point in the rankings, I agree with you early on in the list. It's very much backed by would I trade this player for that player? But after a certain point, they kind of meld into these big tiers. And just because I won't trade you the player I have ranked 200th to the player I have ranked 250th doesn't necessarily mean that I think he's that much better than the lower ranked player. At a certain point, those big tiers just get so jumbled together that on any given day, they could flip-flop for me. So that was really the biggest kind of hurdle for me in creating these rankings, because every time I looked at it on a new day, I thought that guy needs to move and that guy needs to move and that guy needs to move, until I started thinking about it a little bit more in larger tiers. Because at that point, I realized, okay, the again, 200th versus 250th isn't quite as important as the 50th versus the 100th. So the further down you get, the more we have to think of these guys in tiers rather than really individual players.
Yeah, and as with lists like this, it's tough because every league is different, right? There's different sizes, there's different formats, there's different categories or different point formats. So it's really hard to have a one size fits all rankings. And for me, you mentioned it, your evaluation of certain players is different day to day. And for me, it's different league to league, right? You might have a league where you have a lot of pitching prospects and don't necessarily want to trade one for a hitting prospect. Or you might have a league where you're valuing proximity versus valuing upside or whatever. It's different based on league. So it's so hard to create a one size fits all. And I will warn anyone in general using rankings is you never want to take them as gospel. You never want to say like, oh, well, I have the 259th player and the 240th is on waiver, so I should drop the 259th player. No, they're close enough that you want to look at those players and then make your own evaluation. And that's what I've done with rankings in the past. Really, I've used rankings more of like a reality check on the path to just make sure that I'm not trading a guy away for a guy I'm super high on and not being mindful of kind of the industry value. So that's what I've used rankings for in the past. But I'm curious, Kyle, how have you used rankings in the past playing Dynasty?
By and large, the same that you are talking about right now, and very much similar to how we've discussed sort of creating these rankings is higher up. I do look at it a little bit more as maybe I would take player 13 over player 14, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'll take player 113 over 114, and certainly doesn't mean I'll take 213 over 214. But as far as using the individual lists, I'm with you 100%. There is no single list that can encompass every league size, every league format, every scoring format. Really, all you have to do is ask, do you play categories or points? And that will drastically change what these rankings should look like for your league. So when it comes to how to use rankings for your dynasty leagues, I'm with you 100%. You need to have your own opinion on these players and be able to sort of mesh your opinion with the opinion of whoever is putting out these rankings, whether it be ours at Prospects Live or anyone else's out there. As you said, you can't really take any one list as gospel. You need to have your own set of opinions and work them in there.
Yeah, well said.
With that, though, we are going to move into a few players that maybe we surprised ourselves with a little bit in how we ranked them. Because when we have these rankings, we need to talk about them. So, Taylor, I'm going to let you start with one of the two players you want to bring up that you were maybe a little bit higher on than you expected coming into this process.
Yeah, that player is Abimelech Ortiz of the Texas Rangers. Now, I think we had talked about Ortiz on this podcast last year. I'm pretty sure we did. We both liked him. He showed incredible power last year. But the biggest thing for me and why I have him ranked so high, which I have him up at 26 overall on my list. And the biggest thing for me was looking at his year so far. Like I said, he had incredible power last year. He had 33 home runs and 454 plate appearances between A and high A. But the Ks were a little high at 27.8% K rate. The contact was only 68.8%. And that was in high A. And it was even worse before that when he was in low A. So this year, he gets promoted to double A to start the year. And the contact has just taken a huge step forward. So his, like I said, his contact rate last year at high A was 68.8%. This year at double A, it's 81.3%. So he went from having below average contact to having above average contact. He's got a 12.2% walk rate, just a 16.2% K rate, which is a career low. And the only time since the DSL, it's been under 27%. So think about that. He's had a 10% drop in his strikeout rate. And the underlying stats back it up. His current zone contact rate is 82nd percentile. His swinging strike rate is 84th percentile. His whiff rate is 91st percentile. So you take this already elite power that we knew about with Abimelech Ortiz, and now you have really good contact skills on top of that. Like, I am 100% on board with this. And I think a lot of people haven't quite realized just how much that hit tool has taken a step forward. And if this is real, this is huge. And I think he's just going to end up as one of the highest level slugging prospects out there. Now, the only knock on him, if you look at his underlying metrics, is that he is still chasing a few too many pitches outside the zone. But everything else looks absolutely outstanding. So yeah, I'm all aboard with Abimelech Ortiz.
Yeah, I love that one. He's a player that I moved up in my list as well because I did have a little bit of a rough list started in the offseason just because I knew that we were going to have to put this list together. So prior to the season, he was, I believe, just outside the top 100 for me. And I'm really, really encouraged by all the changes that he's made, everything that you called out. The one thing for me, the reason holding me back from maybe moving him as much as you have is just because it is still a relatively small sample in the early weeks of the season here. I love what I'm seeing. I just want to see more of it. So as of right now, he is my 60th ranked prospect, but I could easily see him moving up more towards that top 25 range where you have him if these contact rates and if the plate approach numbers continue looking as good as they have early on this season.
Yeah, and that's a great call because it is early on. And I think one thing that I struggled with when I was making my rankings is I think you started yours in the offseason and then finished them or adjusted them. I didn't start mine in the offseason. I didn't start mine till this last month. So when I was kind of initially making my evaluations, we already had some data from this year. So I think mine might be a little bit more reactive to what has happened this year, but just the improvement has been so dramatic. And contact rates are one of the first things to stabilize in terms of plate appearances with hitter stats. So I do think maybe he's not quite this good. Maybe we could see the contact rate sneak down into like the high 70s or something like that. But even then, it's a really exciting development because it's still a huge improvement over where he was at last year. So totally understand wanting to see a little bit more, but yeah, I'm all in.
Yeah, I completely understand being all in as well. But from one big power bat with improved contact metrics to another, the first player that sort of surprised me, and this might be odd knowing that I'm a Jays fan, but I was surprised by how high I was on Orelvis Martinez, because as a Jays fan, I've had my eye on him for years, and it honestly pained me a little while back when I had decided I was almost completely done with him, because the power has always been there. That's no secret, but his swing decisions were just so bad and his contact rates were leaving a lot to be desired. But then he started making a change. He seemed to almost abandon his power at one point in an effort to get the bat on the ball more. And it looks like that is paying off as he's starting to blend the two sides of the profile together this season. His swing decisions are still not great, in my opinion, but they are greatly improved. And that's backed up by a relatively poor swing rate outside the zone still. He's still chasing a lot of pitches, and the contact rates are still below average, but everything has improved so much that they might just be good enough to let his huge raw power become a legitimate tool he can use to have massive impact at the big league level. And I've moved him up to my 43rd overall prospect, which I know is probably still going to be lower than some other people. But for me, that is a massive move on Orelvis Martinez.
Yeah, he's actually one that I got really excited about too. I actually have him at 33, but he's one that I'm kind of now second guessing of maybe I have him a little too high. Because as you mentioned, the quality of contact, there's still some holes there. It's just he's got massive power, and I do like the adjustments that he's made. I'm a big fan of any player that can improve upon their weaknesses while still being able to harness their strengths and make those adjustments. And so I'm definitely excited about him. Looking at it now, I think I might move him down a little bit more towards where you have him in the kind of 40s instead of the 30s, because I do think I got a little bit too juiced up on him, probably because I was ranking this during his power binge that he was on, where it seemed like he was hitting a home run every single day. So might need to cool the jets a little bit, but yeah, I'm super excited about him as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Lot to like there. Still reason to be concerned, but again, the power is going to play if he can hit at even a slightly below league average level.
Definitely.
With that, though, who is the second player that maybe surprised you a little bit or that you were higher on than you thought you would be?
Yeah, this is a player who I liked a lot coming into this year. But the more that I looked at, not really what he was doing this year, but I mean, he's had an awesome year, but just kind of the underlying profile, the more I was thinking, you know what, he's like even more underrated than I thought, and I need to move him up. And that's Dylan Beavers of the Baltimore Orioles. I have him at number 43. And I mentioned it wasn't so much about what he's done this year, although this year he's slashing 345, 443, 517 at AA, good for a 173 WRC plus. But for me, it was more about the overall tools and kind of where he's at in his profile and where he could be. So he was the 33rd overall pick in the 2022 draft. He overhauled his swing last year and has posted good contact rates that have persisted into this year. And we have him graded on our scouting report, which hasn't been released yet. We have him graded as a 55 hit, 60 power, 55 run bat. And you look at those tools, you have above average hit tool, which he's shown with the improved contact since his adjustments. You've got above average speed, which he's shown with 27 stolen bases last year and 526 plate appearances. This year, he's got 4 and 71 plate appearances. And then you have his carrying tool, which is plus power. That is the one thing we have not seen Dylan Beavers do yet. He only had 11 home runs last year, but I believe that that's going to change this year. I think we've already seen him get into a little bit more power in the early going. You know, he's got a percentage over 500. He's got 2 home runs and 4 doubles in 16 games. And even if the power doesn't take a step forward, even if he's 45 power guy, which is kind of what he's shown so far, you're still talking about a potentially 15 home run, 25 to 30 stolen base bat with good ratios. If that power takes a step forward and he can get into that 30 home run power, we're talking about a first round talent. So I feel like the floor is just a lot higher than people are considering. The ceiling is incredibly high. And oh yeah, by the way, he's in an organization that just pumps out top prospects. So I think Dylan Beavers, there's a decent chance. I would not be shocked if coming into next year, he's at the very top of our prospect list because the ceiling is just that high. And I think as soon as he starts getting into more of that power, which I think we're going to see this year, he's just going to skyrocket to top 10 prospect status. So at 43, I actually had him a little bit higher and I was like, no, this is too high. I need to drop him a little bit. But at 43, I could not drop him anymore. I'm all aboard Dylan Beavers.
Yeah, you're making me think I need to look into him a little bit more again because I was unaware that the floor was maybe as high as you're saying it is here. Obviously, the ceiling is immense, but if the floor is going to be that safe as well, and he's going to hit and hit for power and run, my ranking of 111 is probably going to be too low, and I'm going to need to take a look and see how much closer to your rank I need to get Dylan Beavers.
Yeah, and it wasn't just our scouting report either. I think all the ones I looked at, he had above average to plus power and speed. The questions were really just around how good the hit tool is. I think some had him average, some had above average like us, some had him below average. But I think he proved last year that he's at least average, and I agree with ours that he is going to be above average because he's posting really good contact rates. And again, that's persisted not just last year, but into this year as well. So I'm just really excited, and I think you can get him valued really well right now. So if you're like me and you're buying into him, now's the time to trade for him because I think a lot of people have him like outside the top 100 even, or like back end of the top 100. I think that 11 home runs he hit last year has a lot of people sleeping on just how much power is there.
Yeah, love that call out and love hearing how excited you are about him. But getting into the second guy that kind of surprised me because this is an arm that I liked when he first came into professional ball. But when it comes to Tank Hentz, I want to make it clear that I always liked his stuff, but I've always been very concerned about his ability to hold that stuff deeper into outings. And that led me to putting a pretty high reliever risk tag on him. Last season, he averaged just over 4 innings per start. And that may not necessarily be his fault. It might be the way that the Cardinals are handling him. But even then, in those relatively short outings on average, reports seem to indicate that his stuff would tail off as he got beyond sort of the 3-inning mark or so. So it really did concern me and make me wonder how much of this is the Cardinals babying him and how much of this is the fact that he just can't get deep into games. This season, however, his first 3 outings were all 5 or more innings, and he was reportedly showing an improved ability to maintain his stuff. Now, his most recent outing was just 3 1/3 innings, so I'm not sure exactly what happened with the stuff there, but if he can continue to pitch deeper into games like his first 3 outings and maintain his stuff, then Hentz will likely continue to rise up my ranks. Right now, I have him just inside my top 100 at 95th overall. And like I said, if he can continue showing what he's shown early on, he's going to rise up my ranks really fast this season.
Yeah, he was one that stood out to me as well. I have a lot higher than you do, actually. I probably, again, pretty too high. He's at 56 for me. So I just like, he's one I've been excited about for a long time. Like you, I've had questions over control. He hasn't had as many strikeouts in the past as I've wanted to see. I do feel like St. Louis is not the best pitching development organization, but I'm really encouraged by what he's done so far this year. Again, I might be overreacting a little bit having him that high, but I just think there's a really high ceiling there. I think the floor is pretty high as well. So yeah, I have him just outside my top 50.
Yeah, I think, again, he's one that it's going to just be really interesting to see how he progresses going forwards here. But we can't have the good without the bad. There are bound to be players who we rank surprisingly low that we maybe disappointed ourselves with a little bit. Who's one guy for you that ended up lower on your list than you thought he would?
Yeah, this one hurts because this is a player who I've been hyping up on the podcast. I was really excited about last year and kind of on an island a little bit on how excited I was about him. And that's Rhys Hines. I hate talking about this. I got to apologize to anyone who I convinced on Rhys Hines, because all the excitement last year was on the improved approach, the improved contact, the reduction in strikeouts that seemed to coincide with the changes he made at the plate. And it just really has not seemed to stick this year. He's currently rocking a 43.3% K rate and a 52.1% contact rate. And he has the worst whiff rate at AA. His zone contact rate is second percentile. He swings outside the zone at a 21st percentile rate. And this, we saw this in spring training as well. I think he struck out over 40% of the time in spring training as well. So there's just nothing there for me to really point to. This is going to turn around. He might turn it around. Like I said, he made those adjustments last year, but they really haven't stuck. And for that reason, I left him off my top 300 altogether. If he's striking out that much, he's not going to be a viable player at the big league level, which is unfortunate because he's got massive power. He's been hitting home runs this year, but I can't buy into that. So that was the big disappointment for me.
Yeah, I don't mean to rub this in your face at all, because this is a player that we have talked about a lot. But every time that we brought him up, I believe I kept saying, I just want to see more, because it was impressive what he had done as the season went on and the way that things sort of changed. But it just never felt like there was quite enough of a sample for me. And now what we're seeing to start this season is really backing up a lot of how I felt on Rhys Hines last year, because that swing and miss issue is really rearing its ugly head again.
Yeah, and it's worse than ever. So it could be like all of these are small samples, right? So it could be that he turns it around, that he gets back to making the improved contact he did last year. Because again, he's got immense power and there's upside there. But yeah, I think just how drastically bad it's been. Like if he had a 30% K rate and the contact was like mid 60s to high 60s, I would be more willing to say, oh, it's just small sample noise. But when you have the worst whiff rate in your league and your zone contact is second percentile, you have an over 40% strikeout rate, he has to improve a lot to even get to the point where, okay, maybe there's something here. Like it's just that bad. So yeah, so far it looks like you were right and I was wrong. And I don't see any hope for him turning that around anytime soon. I hope I'm wrong, because I really like him as a player, but yeah, it's been all bad.
I hope you're wrong too, because the power that he carries, if he can bring that into Great American Ballpark in Cincinnati, would be so much fun to have him hitting next to Ellie and just watching him and Ellie launch baseballs out of that park day after day. But he's going to need to make a lot more contact to even make that look like a dream, let alone a reality.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the player that really surprised me on just how low I was on him is George Valera, because this is a player who I knew I was sort of out on, but I didn't realize I was going to be this low on him. The raw tools for Valera have always been super exciting, but the hit tool has been a concern, especially in recent years, where he's run K rates over 25% and contact rates well below 70% last season. Add on top of that the injury concern. He only played 79 games last year and is currently recovering from a hamstring injury, so we don't even have any numbers to point to this season to say he's making an improvement, he's trending in the right direction. But Valera was dangerously close to not making my list. I ended up ranking him 279th overall. Ultimately, the upside here is still too high for me to keep him off my list entirely, and I absolutely have to acknowledge the fact that when he returns, if he is truly healthy finally and performs at even 80% of his upside, he could very quickly rise back up the ranks if he puts things together as he gets healthy. But for now, George Valera just isn't a player I'm very interested in. And he, like I said, was just dangerously close to missing my list altogether.
Yeah, he's one that I thought about dropping even further. I have him a ways above where you have him at 209. But like everything you just said, there's not really a lot to be excited about at this point. I really liked him as a prospect earlier on in his minor league career. I really like the power upside. He seems like he's been knocking on the door, but he just can't stay on the field. In addition to the injuries, the performance hasn't been great. He's had, I believe he got suspended at one point for like threatening an umpire last year. Like, it's just, there's nothing exciting or positive going on with him. So yeah, I have him in the top part of the 200s, but I got to see something soon, or he's going to continue to drop down to either where you have him or eventually off the list here. What's interesting, I have him one spot below his teammate, Jonathan Rodriguez, who's at Cleveland's AAA level, who hasn't really gotten a lot of pub, but he's somebody who, you know, if you want kind of that proximity power bat that George Valera was supposed to be, I think Jonathan Rodriguez is a guy who a lot of people should take a look at, because he definitely doesn't have the pedigree that Valera does, but he's doing some interesting things at AAA there. So just going to kind of shout him out as a power bat that we might see in Cleveland's lineup sooner rather than later in the outfield there.
Yeah, I love that call out. I think it's actually a really timely one, because for someone who doesn't have that pedigree, who hasn't been getting a ton of buzz, I have started hearing his name a little bit more, seeing his name a little bit more out there on Twitter. So now might be the time to go grab Jonathan Rodriguez.
Definitely. Yeah. We might be appearing in one of our articles soon. We'll have to see.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's a great idea. And I'm glad that we brought him up, because I would much rather end on something positive like that than the doom and gloom that we were talking about with the last couple of players before that. But that is everything we have for you guys today. Thank you all for listening. Be sure to follow us on Twitter. Those accounts will be posted in the show notes. And please consider subscribing to Prospects Live for as little as $5 per month to gain access to a wealth of incredible tools and knowledge, including the PLive Plus peak projections. As I talked about off the top, the 2024 pitching metrics are in there now under the PLive Minus moniker. The top 1,000 dynasty rankings are on the site as well. The top 500 prospect rankings that we have been referencing all episode, which are going to be updated in the coming days here. We've got the trade analyzer, the daily sheet, and a ton of additional written and audio content, including more from Taylor and myself. And if you sign up for the 70-tier subscription or higher, you also get access to a personal Discord channel that gives you direct access to all of the fantastic Prospects Live staff members. Again, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next time.